Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability Task Force. We will call the meeting to order, starting with the roll call. Christina Caraballo?
Present.
Harry O'Malley?
Present.
Stephen Lane?
Good afternoon.
Clint McDonald?
Here.
Brett Oliver?
Here.
Ken Kawamoto?
Here.
Valerie Gray? No Valerie yet? Laura Heerman-Langford? No Laura? Leslie Kelly Hall?
Good afternoon.
Nancy Beaven?
I'm here.
Kim Nolan?
Hi, I'm here.
Rich Elmore?
Here.
Eric Heflin?
Present.
Dan Freeman? I believe we should have Dan on. We'll circle back to make sure.
He named himself earlier.
Yeah,
here, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, we can hear you now.
All right, great. Thanks.
That's okay. Mike Peretta?
This is Mike. Michael Peretta. I'm here.
Perfect. And Rob Havasay.
Here.
Okay, great. Christina and Terry, I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Lauren. So we have a big agenda here today. We have about three meetings left to finalize our recommendations before we get them to ONC for the HITECH meeting on April 18th. So today we would like to go over and finalize the three task force subcharges, which include the USCDI expansion, the frequency of publication, and the USCDI process for stakeholder feedback. And then we'd like to, time permitting, move on to discuss the value criteria in preparation for next week, moving from stage one to stage two of our criteria, and then in next week's discussion, also look at the technical criteria. So if we could move on to the next slide.
Christina, this is Val Gray. I just wanted to quickly know I joined.
Great, welcome.
Thanks, Valerie.
So on this slide, I want to point out that you see some red here. What we've done for each of the three subcharges that we're going to look at is we've incorporated, we've taken what was presented during last week's HITECH meeting, and we've added input from the task force call last week as well as from the homework. So everyone who submitted their comments via the homework on each of these three subcharges, those have been incorporated into this. Hopefully all of those have made it in. So going on to the USCDI expansion, let's just go through this to begin. This is our consolidated recommendations to date. First, we have that data classes should be added to the USCDI based upon successful progression through all prior stages. This means meeting the criteria that we still need to be determined and finalized. There should be no limit to the number of data classes added. Some people noted that there should be no limit on the who or what individual organization can propose these data classes. And any individual, any organization, whether it's public or private sector, commercial, enterprise, or nonprofit. Also, someone recommended that even international organizations can be proposed. There should be no predetermined timeline for advancement through stage five. Should there be a timeline of 1 to 2 years, or no predetermined, we need to discuss that today, and is there a timeline needed to incentivize vendors to do this work? Progress through stage five may be impacted by vendor and other stakeholder capacity and business cases. A data class to move to stage six, as determined by the RCE, which will measure data exchange with associated standards. The ratio of available data classes in stage 5 to those that have progressed to stage 6 in the preceding 12 months should be used to review the process for prioritization and implementation, and an addition of recommendation that data classes should be available at a minimum in both English and in Spanish. So before I open it up to discussion, Terry, did you have anything to add to this slide?
Nope, but it might be helpful if we just kind of tick them off one at a time. And, you know, so start with the first bullet and hear people's comments and what do we think. It's the intent of this is just to make it clear that you get into the USCDI having gotten through all of the other gates in the preceding stages.
Great. So, Clem, do you want to kick us off?
Well, it's that's not one that I have any concerns about. I think we have created something. It's that story about it's harder to get to heaven through than a camel getting through an eye of a needle. I think we've created that here. I don't think anything is going to make it. And this is a great way to stall standards. It's way too strict. And things, you know, and things like English and Spanish, are drug names we have to get this? Are there drug names in Spanish? I mean, you created stuff that may not be implementable. Sorry.
So Clem, just to follow up on the English Spanish, I get. What do you have any specific criteria in mind?
Well, the way's too strict. I don't think anything that exists would fit all these criteria. And then when you go on to the additional technical measurements for which there won't exist, this looks like something that doesn't the way to stall ever doing standards. I think you should stop somewhere around level 3 and say now you can. It depends on whether to get into the top means anything.
Clem, so this is, I want to focus us on the expansion process right now. So I think you're talking about the criteria to progress through the stages, which we will get to at the end of this call, but we need to focus on the other 3 charges so that we can knock them off and then spend the remainder of the time getting down to that important piece.
Well, the first one says they must progress through all prior stages, so I'm right on target.
So meeting the criteria, which we need to be determined. So I'm just going to table that for just right now. What about, any other comments on the rest of the areas on the expansion process? And Leslie, I see your hand up.
Yes, thanks. So I don't know whether it's here or at another level of expansion, but there will be evolution, and we need to allow for expansion to be in the breadth of stakeholders added to be using that, or the breadth of function added to something that's been initiated. So perhaps a new data class comes in for that includes a new type of patient-generated finding. And initially that stakeholder is the patient. But going back and expanding, we might have more things like findings and observations and results generated from the patient. That would be an expansion in breadth of functionality. And then it might be, now we're going to add the caregiver and then the plan. So I don't think every time expansion goes wider, it has to go through all of these steps. So that might be a separate workflow that's established, but something we should consider in our recommendations.
Okay, so Leslie, where do you have a specific recommendation that you would add to this set?
So data classes should be able to expand in breadth of function and breadth of users or stakeholders. The process expansion process might therefore have 2 tracks. The one that's initiating a new addition to USCDI, USCDI, and another that is expansion in breadth of stakeholder or function, which is fast-tracked.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. So we may want to flag that one again when we talk about the stages, because certainly some of the initial stages, 2 and 3, are more amenable to that sort of process. And that might be where we want to tuck those in. But we're going to put everything in the parking lot today. Okay.
Stephen?
Yeah, I just wanted to revisit this English and Spanish. I mean, Clem touched on it. I must say, I don't get how it applies to data classes. It seems like an entirely different discussion, the ability to translate words from one language to another, and doesn't specifically apply to data classes in my mind. So I don't know who recommended it, but I don't think it really belongs here.
I agree.
I do as well.
Okay. Me too. So I guess we can take that one off unless the person that recommended it has a rationale. Please speak freely. Okay. Rob?
Yeah, thanks, Christina. third bullet. Should be no predetermined timeline for advancement through stage 5. Is that separate from a time limit? I think our intent is not to create a never-ending list or an ever-expanding list of data classes that never make it through to the CDI or stage 6. So at some point, if something doesn't move for X number of years, like 5 years maybe, do we just say it should be resubmitted and we allow resubmission, but at some point we have to clean and purge the list so it accurately reflects current priorities, not what we hope to do 5 years prior.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Do you think five years, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years?
I just happen to be looking at something on my desk with the number 5 on it. That's where that came from.
I would vote for 3 years.
I think
years.
It's 2.
Yeah, short. This needs to happen or it's not useful.
I'd agree it's shorter, yeah. I'm not married to the number 5. It's in the middle of my telephone keyboard.
2 seems too short. I think it's going to take time for some of this to do. So if we're going to put a limit on it, which I don't think is really necessary, it's just because we haven't done it yet, and I'd rather learn from the experience first. But if we are, I'd keep it 3 to 5.
So stage 4, I'm the one that put this comment in there. This is Nancy. And stage 5 says that QNs and participants are required to update their technology to support the new data class. And so my concern is if we don't have some kind of time frame in there that they have to do that, that it'll never become a priority to get it adopted enough to be able to be widely adopted in stage 6.
Yeah, no, I think putting a limit on the QHINs step is very appropriate. The putting a limit on moving through the entire process was the thing I was concerned about.
So what are the thoughts on, instead of having a specific year, having a recommendation that ONC or whoever is going to govern this, possibly the RCE, look at a annual review of what is in there in the current stages and just make sure they still fit the stages that they're in.
And should we say that they're going to stay through stage 4 for some long period of time, but they can't sit in stage 5 for 5 years waiting for, you know, for prioritization of actually doing the work?
I think that makes a lot of sense, actually.
This is Eric. There's actually some precedent for that, too, which is that some standards bodies like the IHE actually include within their process a mechanism to determine if a standard has been adopted or if not to remove it.
Yeah, this is Laura. I would support that. I think we might need to look at each stage and add a reasonable timeline.
And this is Rob again. I think in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, bullet 5, data class will move to stage 6 as determined by the RCV, which will measure the exchange with associated standards, right? That sort of gets us how long something takes to go from 5 to 6. So it seems like there's a process, if we accept these bullets, to make sure that something does move from, you know, into actual use. So I think putting a limit on things that are just not coming, getting standards developed, just not getting moving forward in the early stages is more appropriate to my comment.
Clem, you're next.
Oh, this is a comment on the one of the earlier comments, and I don't think it's necessary now. Thanks.
Rich, go ahead.
Yeah, the fourth bullet, progress through stage 5 may be impacted by vendor or other stakeholder capacity in business cases. I had one question, which is, what was intended by through stage 5? Does that just mean applicability to that stage, or just stage 5 and prior? So that's just a question. But then, you know, certainly vendor capacity could be an issue, but I'm kind of concerned about the folks that actually have to handle the data collection. And I want to make sure that we're explicit about, you know, workflow and capacity of the clinicians and the provider organizations, assuming that's who has to do the collection to be able to handle this.
Yeah, I think... Terry, was that you?
No, but this was sort of a rephrasing of something that I've gotten, and I can't remember who it was from, but it was to be sensitive to the fact that the vendors are not going to necessarily pick up every data class to move forward. They're probably going to be selective based on what makes most sense to them. And in that, them being sensitive to their customers, in a sense, their stakeholders. So it was an attempt to acknowledge the fact that the process of getting through stage 5 may be uneven, you know, depending on sort of who the vendors are and what their business cases are and whether the data class actually contributes to what it is they want to be doing. And that's sort of independent from any other incentives that get put in to do this work, like you don't get paid unless CMS gets this data this way.
Yeah, it was kind of our way of looking at how the market is going to actually drive making it into stage 5 and then actually being more widely adopted throughout the industry.
Without necessarily having to craft it right here on the phone, it may be worth just thinking about how you could provide some greater clarity about that concept. It wasn't as easy to read necessarily. And then I think is, if I may just add one other comment, which is as it relates to expansion. I think this got picked up by Leslie Kelly Hall in her comments earlier, but really we had this notion of something that was use case dependent and was also applicable to particular stakeholders. So, and Terry, I don't know if that was part of where you were going with kind of the uneven application, but it may be that, you know, something is critical to behavioral health segment, but not necessarily to primary care. What's that? We need to, I think, to be able to be allowing for a segmented approach so that we're not trying to make, you know, an all singing, all dancing solution for every purpose.
Stephen, would you like to add a comment?
I was just going to say that I think the workflow considerations are real and valid, but I don't think that they should be limiting. I think we should let things in the front door and work out the workflow as we go. Just because something seems hard at the outset doesn't mean it's not worth looking into.
Great.
No excuses.
Oh, and as we discuss the slides. If any, Terry and I were talking about this last time. I know we have the hand raise function, but if anybody has a comment based on that is in response to another task force member's, please feel free to just chime in so that we can just create better dialogue.
So this is Laura, and I had a one on the last one around this progress through stage five may be impacted by vendor, that fourth bullet point. I am not sure that's really a recommendation. When you read the others, they read as recommendations. That one feels like it's a statement of reality, perhaps, maybe an excuse of something. I'm just not sure that it belongs there at all.
It sounds more like a criteria to measure the impact and capacity than it does a expansion recommendation.
Well, I kind of agree. It just is a fact that it will be influenced. I don't see. I don't agree. I agree with what it just said.
If that's the case, I just want to make sure we pick it up somewhere, particularly as it relates to the folks that have to do the data collection. I mean, I think that's the most important constituency here to make sure we're not overwhelming them.
Well, along that point, I think we should make a sharp distinction between requirements for data that exists in electronic form versus that's which is going to require manual input. That's kind of been dropped. It was discussed, I think Ken talked about that a long time ago, but there's just night and day difference between the issues surrounding those two.
Great.
So you want to propose a alternative language or type it in eventually?
I think upper higher level, we should make a distinction between things that are sort of sitting there but aren't coded well or aren't being sent, you know, lab tests, EKG tests, spirometries, you name it. If it's collected already in most systems or many systems, that's easier. It's not going to cause labor problems, whereas if you're asking another 65 questions for the nurse who's checking the patient in, that's going to choke the system.
So this is Laura, and this fourth bullet point, plus what Clem has been saying, and also I think it might have been Eric, I'm not sure who was the last voice, I think what we're talking about is some of the reality, and you know, we keep hearing Clem's voice of caution that this is too hard. I'm not sure we're going to be able to get through this. Is this realistic? And I feel like this fourth bullet point is, again, part of our, this is kind of tough. We're not sure how well this is going to go. And I'm not sure where to capture it. I'm not sure it's on expansion recommendations, but I do think there are several thoughts going throughout the group on, you know, wanting to go back and revisit our candidates or our stages and what we've put in there for the requirements. But also, you know, there's a bit about our reality thinking that's saying this may not be easy and it may take some time. And Clem saying, you know, if it's electronic, that could be easier. If you're trying to do something new, that's going to be harder. So there may be another type of a slide or a document that talks about some of these realities that we realize.
Nancy, go ahead.
I have already made my comments. Thanks.
Clem?
Well, it's actually back to the expansion, if I may. That is, so one has to realize that a lot of these things expand automatically. So, yeah, you know, ICD-10, you get more stuff every year, often in response to realities, and I don't think we have to decide about that if that's a class that we're already accepting, and maybe people don't feel the same way.
Leslie?
So I'd like to talk about what Clem just said. I do agree that expansion has to happen, whether it's another fast track for adding more stakeholders, as I recommended, or adding more functionality. There has to be an acknowledgement or fast track for organic changes. But I'd also like to comment about the idea of regulatory harmonization and quality measure harmonization. So for instance, let's say we were going to initiate a quality measure task force today. That would start maybe at NQF or an organization like that, and they would develop measurement and then look at studies to determine whether they're effective and then pilot that and then go to say, yes, this would be adopted as a national measure. In that process, it might be identifying data, highly likely identifying data that is not currently being collected and would require a change in workflow. But this process that I mentioned previously might be a 5-year process. So in our intake process, we also should allow for the idea that something might come in that today isn't being collected, but by virtue of this harmonization with ongoing efforts like NQF and ARC and the rest, the intake process would acknowledge that these data classes 5 years from today when this pilot may be needed. And so therefore, we have an awareness process built in that helps to inform the industry of impending or proposed regulation, quality measures, or other needs. If without that, then we end up with either a quality measure comes in with the data has to be manually processed and there's no process to get it through US CDI. So I'd like to add to this expansion or intake process the ability to harmonize with regulatory and quality measures in such that progression from manual entry to collection is in sync with those proposed measures.
Leslie, this is Terry. Just to be clear on that, so the US CDI process ought to be one in which quality measures move from manual to electronic reporting, meeting the criteria along the process.
Or that we harmonize the efforts so that the industry is made aware of future potential data requirements at a very early stage on, so as it converts to electronic gathering, there's some sort of harmonization in those processes. But to just in hand say we're not going to take anything that hasn't been, or we have a bias against something that isn't already collected, puts us in always doing the same thing, but not allow us for evolution by informing the industry that these data elements need to move to an electronic gathering process.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, got it. This actually might fit very nicely in the sort of values discussion because there's certainly a value to pre-existing data that just needs to be attached to a standard but it's already electronically collected or already collected versus a new set that needs not only the process to collect it, but also the standards to attach to. So there's a value in both of those.
So just lest I was not trying to argue against any new data. I was just saying there's some easy stuff we should not have to go through 20 stages to get to.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay.
So it looks like there are no more comments on this slide.
So then let me raise a comment because we sort of threw it out there without a whole lot of detail, but it's sort of bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the implying a role for the RCE in measuring the adoption of a particular data class with its associated standards, and whether or not that harkens back to a comment from Larry Wolf about 2 years ago, where he's saying, how come we can't use the system to exchange, that helps us exchange this information to actually monitor the exchange itself. Let me just toss that out and see if, you know, is this reasonable, workable, possible?
I think it could, but it comes back to, are we basically going to, you know, say this is a good standard when it's done, or are we trying to encourage them? I'm not clear on what it gives you to reach a stage. What's going to happen? Who's going to decide what when we reach a stage? But if you got to get the 6 before anybody uses it, then of course you're not going to anybody using it to get the gauge stage 6.
Yeah. No, I think stage 6 is sort of a recognition that you've gotten national deployment and high level of adoption. So stage five is where the work gets done.
What's the point of reaching these stages? You know, is it just you're going to tell the baseball score after it's over, or are you trying to influence the outcome? I think we have to decide that.
Well, that was the purpose of adding the stage 6. By adding stage 6, it's saying, like, we don't want to just get to stage 5 where it's in the U.S. CDI. We want to say, okay, it's in here. Now let's evaluate that the market's actually using it. So let's get a stage 6 so that it's not really just sitting on the shelf. So that's, we added that stage 6 to do just what you're talking about, Clem, and make sure it's being used. And well, if it's not, why?
Well, I'm going back to, I had originally thought if you got to a given level of support that people would be encouraged to use it. And I don't know where that happens. I don't think it does happen in this sequence. Or it's going to be so, once you got to the place where you'd be encouraged, you've already been doing it, so what? Who cares? I mean, if you said you have to use ICD-9 in Medicare data, who cares? It's done. Sorry, it's ICD-10.
So this is Laura. On the stage 6 itself, has a slide been prepared that talks about the purpose and how you get in, how you get out, et cetera, like we have for the other stages? Have I missed
yes.
that?
Yes.
Okay.
Eric, do you have a comment?
Yes, back to Terry's question. I believe it was Terry that asked it. I think you asked, can we use this to evaluate HIEs? I was wondering if you could elaborate a little more on what the purpose of such an evaluation would entail.
The purpose is just to get a measure of the extent of adoption without having to survey everyone. You know, what are you doing? Basically, is looking at the traffic, whether we can do that.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. See,
is it workable?
So I think you'd asked. Thank you. That's helpful. So with respect to that, I think it might be technically viable, but I do worry about the privacy concerns of, you know, is it worth looking at all of the clinical data in order to assess the maturity of the HIE or the QEN or the content being exchanged? It will be a matter of trade-offs ultimately to answer your question.
Yeah, and I guess it gets to the point of, so how do we know this whole process works? You know, how do we know it gets the outcome that we're seeking, which is wide adoption of interoperable data?
Well, if that's the kind of, this is Eric, if that's the point that you're kind of getting to, I think it's a great point. And perhaps this is actually already accommodated by this process in that items that are not meeting the objectives would go back into this, you know, 6-stage pipeline as, well, we tried this version of the data class. We found the following issues, such as it was not expressive enough to represent a concept we need to express, and then it could go back into the stages in the process for a subsequent updated version of that specification.
Well, to get to Terry's point, I don't see any problem with privacy because you're not asking to hand touch and look at all the data. You're looking for statistics as they go in or out of those systems.
Well,
so I don't see privacy.
So
Agreed.
This is right. The concern I have there is, in order to gather those statistics, you actually do have to look at all the data. So someone will actually have to analyze and snoop into each clinical message going back and forth in order to capture whether or not that data element or data class is being used in order to compile the statistics.
You picked a word that kind of suggests bad things, but they're going into the system and some computer is looking at them now in some fashion to store them and put them away.
Leslie, go ahead.
So back to the question, are we rating the innings or the whole score? I think the difference between the USCDI and an organic standards process that's driven by the industry is that this is to set the stage for potential regulation, rulemaking, certification or some way the government says, yes, in fact, this can be used, or we acknowledge that this can be used or may be used or shall be used. So I do think the outcome is that it's ready for consideration by the government in one way. And I'm not sure where that fits in our scale of number. Is it number five? Is it number four? But it is part of the outcome.
That's what I was hoping for. And then I think we shouldn't wait till it's done to encourage its use. It's sort of back getting the cart before the horse.
I think excellent points. And in kind of putting this together, Leslie, what you just stated, I think we were trying to get at in bullet four. So it sounds like bullet four might need to be revised because it's not as clear. But I think that what you just stated was kind of the goal of that bullet.
Yeah, I don't think our goal is to replicate or compete with existing industry evolution of standards. Our goal is to have a mechanism to make it regulatory ready and in a way that industry will acknowledge that that process is valid.
And Leslie, this is Terry. And I take from that sort of the implication that left to its own devices, industry will not build necessarily the standards and the standard data classes needed for a wide range of use cases. Such as quality and so on.
Yes, I don't think there's any harmonization right now between new quality initiatives and data that's being collected that this could help remedy. There's also no natural sponsors for patients as people interested in stakeholders that want to have data available to them and or those they choose to be on their care team. So in those two use cases we see, or stakeholder groups, we see that there is a reason for regulatory readiness.
What kind of patient data, what would a patient want that a provider wouldn't?
I think it would depend on the stakeholder that the patient is interacting with. So for instance, perhaps as a data collector and user myself as a patient, I might be doing my observations of daily living, my pain scale, here's how frequently Meals with Wheels comes, here's my social determinants of health. And although that may or may not go into the detail to a medical record, it might go into the navigator, the coach, the payer system that's helping the patient or the social worker. So when we start looking outside the narrow scope of an EHR to a broader scope of a community-based system with the patient participating, then we have data that's new and sometimes material to immediate care, sometimes not, sometimes material to a longer lifestyle and chronic care management. So we don't yet know what kind of data might be important to the patient that isn't necessarily material to that episode of care.
And this is Rob. I'll add an example, too. We see the emergence of what some people are calling social care data, so things like fall monitoring, where a family member might monitor an elderly person at home and have monitors to determine what cabinets are opening, where food is stored, things like that. And the other thing that sometimes separates patient data needs from clinician data needs is frequency, right? Patients may look at their blood pressure daily or weekly. Clinicians may want to see a summary monthly or quarterly. So the frequency of the summary and the transmission is also something that differentiates.
Great.
Thanks. That was helpful. Can I just on that, can I just reinforce, I think a point that's been brought up several times, that this is very use case specific, and I just want to make sure that we're not, you know, coming up with so broad requirements where the need itself may be more targeted.
Yes, I agree with you, Rich. So getting us back on track on the expansion process itself, I think if there are no more comments on the actual expansion, we should move to the next slide. Leslie, do you have a comment?
Just in general, an expansion fits in that. We still have yet to hear from ONC what kind of staff structure or what kind of support we could expect. We could design something that's not implementable because there is no resources available within government to oversee, manage, and support this. So that is a to-do item we need before our final recommendations go forward.
Yep, and that is actually an agenda item that we have to talk about with the TEFCA co-chairs as well to see how we can fit that into the work that they're doing.
Thank you.
Clem?
Well, you've heard this story before. It's an old song. But I think before we decide all this stuff, we got to decide whether this is really to encourage the use of some that are pretty good or to wait until they're all done. And then I think we have a totally different question about at what stage we declare victory. And as I've said earlier, we're not going to get anything through this for a long, long time if we keep such a strict all the way up to five.
I hear your concern. I think actually things are going to move quite quickly. As an example, clinical note, which you know basically needs a wrapper just so you know what's in the container, but no one's going to specify what's in a clinical note. So that should move very quickly, tied more to transport standards than the semantic standards.
No, I'm with you, but I think if you look at the details of these thresholds, they have to jump. It's got to be used everywhere before you can decide it should be used.
No. It's got to be tested. So stage four gets you testing in a commercial venue. So real heavy duty, let's kick the tires and get it running, as opposed to the stage before that, which is more like a draft standards for trial use sort of process where we're going to try this and we're going to identify where its failure modes are and fix it.
So maybe we should just tweak the thresholds. I read them as being pretty high bars.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that. And you know, you're absolutely right. The purpose is not to make this a tighter series of filters. It's to make sure that what's ready gets moved along. So.
Okay.
And remember, it's the floor, not the ceiling, as the ONC team has said multiple times for the USCDI specifically. So I think we can go ahead and move to the next slide. This is the frequency of publications. So there are nothing in red here, but we did look at everybody's input from the homework and revise these recommendations to incorporate it. So the first is that we should publish the USCDI annually with necessary details of new items added, provide periodic bulletins to announce the addition of new data classes to stage 5 as they become available, provide periodic bulletins to announce the addition of new data classes to stage 4 candidate, And just overarching, our rationale is to give industry as long a lead time as possible. So really transparency and awareness. Stephen, go ahead and kick us off.
I was just going to say on that first sub-bullet, in addition to details of new items added, I suspect there will be clarifications and refinements of items as they move along through the stages. So I think part of the annual update should include kind of a refresh of existing items with the latest content.
So Stephen, Terry, just to amplify that a little bit or clarify, so we had added candidate stage four, so this is a group that's being commercially tested. Do you think we ought to be going back even farther and sort of give a preview of coming attractions at each stage?
I mean, I assumed when I read this that when we were publishing the USCDI, and maybe I shouldn't have assumed it, that we were not only publishing sort of the final, you know, what's made it over the line, but everything that's in the pipeline. Again, just to give everyone in the industry a sense of where, what was coming, where it was in the process. And maybe if that wasn't other people's assumptions, maybe that's worth discussing and clarifying.
That's my assumption too.
So this is Laura. I'm just going to jump in because I have a just a question around some of the process. So on the, I mean, I can understand publishing, especially around five, and I can see your point of saying, you know, this is what's in four, kind of highlighting it on an annual basis. But would the candidate stages and what data elements are in which stage be available at all times? I mean, would you be able to go and see it? So, I mean, anybody who would be interested should be able to go and say, well, what's currently proposed, what's in one, two, three, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I guess I just saw if there was going to be an annual event, a publication, a communication, a press release, whatever it was, that it would be the whole thing, you know, this year's refresh. But I agree. In an ideal world, there's some living website where people could go and see whatever's in the pipeline.
Right. I mean, and I would agree, an annual publication could just be kind of, you know, drawing a line in the sand saying, you know, at this date and time on an annual basis, this is the state of the union, whereas it's an evolving and moving thing online that people can see without, you know, ongoing. But I think having that record of an annual quote report would probably kind of meet that need.
Yep. And that has been discussed. I think we took out the bullet, but it was similar process to the ISA where it's living and breathing and there are places for online comments, but then you have quote unquote a reference guide or a reference edition annually.
So something is published to the USCDI or is a new data class in stage five. What do we expect the industry response to be?
Let's get moving to support it.
Yeah. So ONC, you know, has said that what they will do for data classes in that have made it into the USCDI is to point to those data classes and hope that the entire regulatory and payment might of the U.S. government goes behind them. So that, you know,
but it wouldn't be necessarily through a mechanism, you know, you shall implement a data class. It's going to be through a mechanism like you were describing last time, Terry, which is, you know, we want to do something which involves having, you know, applying that data class, right?
Well, you know, so I don't know. It just depends on how badly ONC wants to push it through. No, it's a question. I don't know. I don't know.
Otherwise, it seems like a very kind of academic exercise. I mean, if it's not tied to kind of a real, you know, purposeful use.
So the way I see it is it's going through the whole process. You get to stage five, and it's saying this is ready. Now that's when the regulatory drivers come in and say, now industry needs to adopt it and support these data classes to be used to get to stage six. And I don't know that we can really write those recommendations in this, but I think that's the goal, is to have a place where we say this is ready and this is why, and it's moved through here, and these are the business cases that support it, and here's the starting from the beginning with the value use case, business case, moving all the way through to the technical requirements being ready.
And, but Christina, based on what you just said, though, it sounds like the you must do this is not coming from the US CDI. It's coming from then some regulatory overlay that references some part of the US CDI.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
I think it would be good for us to be clear about that.
And what makes it different from the ISA in that case? So being clear as to what our use case is different. So if the,
well,
ISA,
the ISA
is...
ISA is more of a list. It's not. It's not a funnel, and it's not, you know, targeting kind of broad adoption.
I agree. I just won't think we should make that explicit in our difference, you know, and maybe back to our charge.
Well, getting back to my old saw, are we going to not have most of what's in ISA in for 5 years on this document set?
I don't think ISA really deals with data classes per se. Clem, I'm not sure if I understand your question.
Well, it actually, there's a lot of parallels. No, it's how severe we make it to get to the point where the government will encourage the use. Because I guess that is actually sort of the driving force, what I heard. And if we have to wait till everybody's used it, and I've said this too many times, it's not going to have any effect.
I think this is a great discussion, and maybe we can add some of these things to our recommendations or things that we've identified to move from stage five to stage six, bringing us back to the publication frequency. Are there any more comments related to our recommendations on here?
Well, this says stage four, and that's more suitable to my eyes than stage five or six. I mean, the third thing, periodic announce the addition of classes to stage four. That's what I think as far as we should try to go before we encourage it.
Yeah, and the stage four, the rationale behind putting that one on here as an announcement is that once it gets to candidate, it should be more on people's radar. So we wanted to pull that one to people's attention. And then I think adding new items, the first one was just saying, hey, these things are getting put in here.
I think there's a distinction between encouraging and requiring. And, you know, particularly as you think about smaller companies that have to be very careful. Well, every company has to be careful, but smaller companies in particular, I think, are going to be challenged with, many potential targets that aren't yet right in front of them as something that they have to do. So I think being clear about requirements to use USCDI coming from somewhere outside of the USCDI process is important to be clear on, as well as perhaps encouraging in stage four.
Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to support the first sub-bullet there that the USCDA should be published annually. I think that's the right cadence.
Great, thank you. Brett?
Just wondered on the second and third bullets where we're talking about providing periodic bulletins, do we need to be any more specific about that, whether they're regular intervals or periodic bulletins after a certain number of data classes are added? I feel like if we had a regular, whether it's quarterly or semi-annual or whatever it is, bulletins, that would make it easier for industry to anticipate. So basically we're putting it on them right now. You better go check this website and see where where the data classes are in the process every couple of weeks, or what if we were provided those bulletins in a more regular period instead of just saying periodic. I don't know what that means. Any thoughts there?
We didn't want to be overly prescriptive, but definitely open to discussion.
Yeah, maybe we should be overly prescriptive. You know, I think that's a good point. If our goal is to give industry a heads up, we ought to make it as easy as possible for them to see what's coming. You know, so maybe just a quarterly bulletin says, here's what's new in the last 3 months.
And it could say nothing, you know, say nothing's
yeah,
new.
Say nothing. Nothing's new. You know,
but at least that would be, that's as important an update to me in industry than here's 10 new ones coming.
So do we want to amend this to say, you know, quarterly bulletins?
Yeah.
If we can afford it.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, we'll probably get into this when we discuss the stages, because I think implicit in all of our discussions is some model in the background that allows all of these data classes to be tracked in their various stages of progression. You know, were such a system to be in place, then doing periodic quarterly bulletins would not be a huge lift.
So back to a comment Rich made about things not getting the support, even if they're in Canada or on people's radar. And sorry if I didn't translate that properly, Rich. But it made me think about the fact that we have, throughout this process, wanted to be very transparent on what these data classes will support and the importance and the values they're bringing to the industry. So within this publication, maybe we recommend that not only the data classes are highlighted, but the why they're being looked at is in there as well, because that will also give insight for just providers and developers to even think about their strategy of who wants what to start building tools that are desired.
Good. This is Terry. Christina, that's a really interesting thought, and it makes me think that almost, you know, each data class maybe goes through this process and acquires a rap sheet as it goes. And it starts off with sort of who are the stakeholders behind it? What are the initial proposed data classes? Now, how did it do in stage three? How was it, you know, renewed or refreshed or altered? And basically, so at the end, you end up, when you get to USCDI level, you actually have a summary sheet that says, "Yeah, here's the provenance of this data class. This is where it came from, why it got here, how it got here."
I like that idea. I like the idea of sort of the history of this data class.
Yeah.
Me too.
Agreed.
Okay, we'll come up with a one-pager.
I see no other comments on the frequency for publication. Any last minute thoughts? Going once, going twice. Next slide. Great. So next is the process for stakeholder feedback. Similar to the last slide, we took everybody's recommendations and revised our current slide to create this one. So the preliminary recommendations is that there's an annual release of new USCDI followed by public comment period of at least 90 days, two annual opportunities for public comment are allowed, provide an open public forum for each stage in the process, record all proposed data classes in a searchable, sortable resource that facilitates interaction through review and discussion among potential stakeholders and enables public comment. Feedback needed during each stage is to be determined as we build out criteria. So that was kind of a placeholder, that last bullet. Leslie, go ahead and start us off.
Thanks. So I have two thoughts. One, I'd like to see some sort of formal process to act as the patient sponsor for stakeholder feedback, or without that deliberation, it's hard to get that kind of due diligence process as part of the stakeholder feedback. And then the second is, because we're, as a result of doing this, we're saying that something is ready for regulation or ready for rules, et cetera, we should ask that stakeholder feedback that also seeks to see where there is complementary, synergistic, or harmonized opportunities beyond the stakeholder who submitted it, especially regulatory. One of the arguments we hear often is the burden for data collection is exacerbated when many different regulatory bodies ask for the same data in different ways under different standards. So I'd like to have a part of this process to make sure that there is a burden for the submitter to make sure that the stakeholder feedback includes other regulatory bodies that would be positively or negatively impacted by that data class recommendation.
And Leslie, this is Terry. Do you think putting that into one of the stages would make, one of the earlier stages would make sense?
I think it might. But I think that for the stakeholder feedback, my first comment on who is acting on behalf of the patient needs to be here.
Do you have a recommendation on who that might be or how that might get done?
I think it depends on what the governance structure ends up looking like. If the governance structure is the current RCE structure, for instance, although the recommendations have included placement of patient sponsors on there, it doesn't get to, I think, a body that says our sole purpose is as the stakeholder. And it might be a group that's convened by ONC across many different patient organizations or advocacy groups. I'm not sure what it really will depend upon the governance structure.
So I just wrote that bullet to summarize what you said, Leslie, is to, for we are recommending that there is active engagement with a variety of stakeholders and making sure that we include the patient sponsor, patient voice.
It's not just including the voice, but actually there really isn't a body that represents, there's a body that represents the EMRs, there's a body that represents different government stakeholders, but there isn't one that represents patients collectively. And so we all say we're all about the patient, but in general it doesn't happen without deliberation and a due process that includes that.
Yeah, I agree, Leslie. This is Stephen. I think, you know, on some level, this, something similar could be said about different clinician stakeholder groups that don't really have a body, you know. I mean, does home care have a consistent voice? Does ambulatory nursing have a consistent voice? I mean, I think the idea that stakeholders need to be engaged and input needs to be sought out from various groups that aren't otherwise well enfranchised is a good point.
Thank you both. Valerie, go ahead.
Yeah, I think actually the previous conversation just covered a lot of what I was going to comment on. I was really very focused on how we can make that public comment period as broad and meaningful as possible. And I agree with some of the earlier changes that were recommended.
Wonderful. Laura, you're next.
Yes, thank you. I'm reading this and I'm thinking about it in real life, and I'm thinking that, these are all nice statements and I agree with the comments that have been made, but how this really works is still confusing to me because we've talked about the stages and timelines of things staying in each stage and would that need to be addressed separately in a future conversation, and then the different kind of feedback, and we've put in here annual release and two annual opportunities. And so I agree with the statements like, you know, we need the opportunities, we need the public comment, we need the public platform, and it needs to be open. But some of the timing that's related in this is confusing maybe to me. I'm not sure what the word is. Because we're worried about things lingering too long in our stages. We don't really know how long things should be in stages. We're saying that we need feedback on this kind of almost a timeline. And I don't know that we're really all lined up here. And so I think the timing that we're talking about here, we need to be careful about and look at a little bit more carefully.
I agree with you 100%.
And I'm not even sure, like two annual opportunities for public comment. Opportunities, yes, but maybe there should be more. Maybe there should be a different way that it can get it. I don't know.
Yeah. To share what we were thinking with that bullet, it was kind of more of like the drives, like two annual drives where we're trying to actively solicit feedback. So yes, agree. We're creating this document where people can constantly provide feedback, and it's a living, breathing document. Then two times a year, was written here, thinking maybe that's when ONC or the RC puts out a set of questions that they want feedback on, and there's sort of a campaign and awareness, and it gets the industry kind of discussing what's in the USCDI, maybe for lack of better terms, a draft reference, and then at the annual for public comment.
So maybe you're talking about things like two annual opportunities or campaigns, two annual campaigns, but ongoing opportunities for public comment.
Yeah, we'd like people to be able to comment 24/7. What ONC does with those comments and how they roll them up and how they report them out, that might be a separate issue.
I like the idea of two annual campaigns and ongoing opportunities. How do other people feel about that?
Yeah, Christina, that was what I was going to chime in on. I think two is sort of unrealistic. It's like everyone's got a day job. I like the idea of an open, you know, wiki kind of an opportunity for people to constantly provide feedback. But I think realistically to expect, you know, whether it's ONC or the RCE or whoever else to collate all that, to me, I think if we're talking about a 90-day comment period, I would do that once a year. I'd link it to the annual release of the updated document. And just, you know, I think two campaigns a year just seems unrealistic.
I agree with Stephen, and I would also add that when a regulation is named, that has to indicate a data set associated with that regulation. That in itself has a public comment period. So it would have then two avenues, one in the publication of the document, and the next would be when it's designated for use, there's opportunity for comment. So I think we're covered.
Unless it's Laura, I'll just add one more thing. We still need to look at each of our stages and understand timing within that, and then look at the feedback needs for those timings. I mean, if we think that they would have different rates at which they might go through a stage, that might influence some of the feedback, which could get a little bit undoable as well. So, it's, like I said, it's something we need to look at in together, I think, in tandem.
Yeah, Laura, this is Dan. I was thinking that same thing too, which is probably why I think at one level we need to think of the opportunity for feedback as being continuous and open, and potentially, you know, I could think of a handful of things where we could anticipate a particular data class, you know, jumping stages quite rapidly, actually, because it's ready and people are already using it.
Well, I think we're hopeful for that, but, you know, in order to not jump too fast, we probably need to have some guardrails in place to say, you know, there is this amount of time for public feedback, like a minimum amount that they stay in a stage, and that it's, you know, published, that this is in and it's ready for feedback. And maybe it's that early stages they can go quickly, later stages take a little more time. I haven't thought through that well enough, probably. But,
do they have to go through all stages at always? And could they just jump to four or three if it looked good? What's the point of doing all those other steps if it's obvious that it's already made it?
Well, I mean, we have criteria set up, and so I think you're right. You could have something that comes in as a candidate that has met all the criteria to start out at three or four, perhaps. So then what does that mean for any kind of a public feedback and stakeholder comments?
Yeah, I'm going to get Adam from the ONC team to chime in.
Thanks, Christina. I'll just chime in real quickly one of the reasons that we were thinking about these two opportunities for public comment what was to kind of account for that possibility where a data class, you know, kind of goes into a light speed and moves through categories or stages particularly quickly. So if, you know, it enters, you know, stage four, you know, very soon after the annual release of USCDI, and then, you know, 6 months later or, you know, however many months later, it has advanced really quickly and progressed a lot, then there's another opportunity for us to get that information and kind of reassess where it lies, you know, in the process.
Thanks, Adam. Stephen, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I did. Thanks, Christina. I forget who it was, mentioned the whole notion of governance and made reference to the idea that perhaps the RCE would assume governance of this whole process. And I don't know that any of that has been discussed or is even sort of on our plate to discuss here within the task force. Now, just curious, did I miss that part of the conversation, or is that still an open topic?
I was just citing as an example, Clem. No, there is. We have not discussed it, nor do we know if it's in our purview. But there has to be some governance structure.
Yeah. Okay. I just wasn't sure if I'd missed that because I think it is an interesting topic of conversation, but don't want to distract us with it if this isn't the time.
Nancy?
Sorry, Nancy? I don't have my hand up.
I see no more hands up.
So we'll keep this topic open as we go through the criteria for each individual stage and perhaps give thought at that time about what the feedback opportunities are or which ones are required.
Yep, thanks for that reminder, Terry. So during, as Terry just said, during each of the stages, we wanted to add this as a point, a piece of discussion to add to our final recommendations. Are there any other comments on this slide?
Hi, this is Mike. I just have a quick question. Do we have, and this is sort of open, do we have anything in mind for the second to last point for some sort of web-based application? Is there an existing platform, or is this kind of something that we would also have to explore later on?
I believe it would be something to be explored later on.
Very cool. I don't have anything beyond that. I was just thinking about it and what could work. But thank you.
Okay, so can we move to, do we have time to move to the next slide?
Yeah, Kristen, we've got like maybe another 5 minutes before a public comment.
Okay, great. Then I guess we can go ahead and begin to discuss the value criteria in more detail. The upcoming slides are going to be value, and we have to whom, the evidence, and measures for the tiers, as well as some questions. So what we have on these slides now is really a dump of, Adam and Stacy went through and aggregated all of the comments that we've received through lots of homework, all the ongoing homework, and put them all here. So this is very draft format, but we wanted to go ahead and get some thoughts. So the value to whom tier one, we had as the patients, both current and future, including individuals as population, public, and community, and then providers with clinicians, caregivers, and clinical support staff. And then tier two is really everyone else, including the researchers, technology folks, payers, the ecosystem, and others. Nancy, go ahead and kick us off on this one.
I would really like to add quality reporting here to payers or quality, and I think the value of this is way beyond payment for payers. And so the word that comes to my mind is quality, but maybe someone else has a better word. If we can add in, like, additional information under tier two.
In this area, is quality sort of one of the pieces of regulation? You know, is there a broader, you know, do we need a government stakeholder, for example?
Could be. That's another way to address it, I think.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, that is the primary sponsor of the USKDI.
Yes, we should pay attention. Okay.
Stephen, go ahead.
Sorry. Other things that come to my mind, you know, public health is clearly a key stakeholder in terms of reporting and sharing of data. Potentially, you know, we could link the criminal justice system in under providers, but I think that they've got potentially some other needs that maybe fall outside of that. And then I think community service providers that, or community services that may not immediately fall under providers, you know, schools, other kind of service providers, you know, Meals on Wheels, food kitchens, homeless shelters, those all come to my mind as potentially missing. I don't know if that falls under ecosystem. I don't know which ecosystem we're talking about there. The rainforest?
I think it'll fall under community.
Yeah, maybe ecosystem has to go up into tier one, just to make sure that, with that caveat, that that's what we're talking about.
I mean, I think calling out community services.
Community services. Yeah, the implication of this slide is that the value is worth more in tier one than it is in tier two.
I don't know. The value to payers is pretty high.
Yeah, so, but then the question is, so why two tiers? I'm destroying our slide. It's sort of the value to whom, and are we ranking different stakeholders as having intrinsically different value?
Well, I think we have a bit of a directive from, I don't know whether it's from Congress or from Cures or from Don Rucker, to have a primary focus on patients and clinicians and caregivers. But maybe that is artificial. I mean, in my mind, it makes sense to push some of these, you know, payers and researchers to another tier, but it's a gray line.
Because what's going to happen, I think, with this tiering, is that we're going to have choices to make about value to the system as a whole, and then to bring in Clem's point of, if you've already got it and it's easy to move, doesn't that have value in and of itself, regardless of who you are at the recipient end?
Well, the other thing, I'm jumping in, I guess I shouldn't, but the other thing is that it's the first movement that's the hardest. So if you can move it to the clinicians who aren't getting half this now, people have the idea this is all done, you can move it anywhere. So I think we may get it all blended and mushed up if we don't really just get it out to somebody and you can get it to everybody else. It's the it we're talking about, which data is the most valuable.
So what you're saying is use patient access and caregiver access as the first use case, the one that we kind of focus in on, and the you believe that the rest will flow more easily thereafter.
Well, I mean, I've done it, and it's a ton of work to set up the standards for, I mean, build the codes and make sure everything's working right. But shoot, you know, it's just text. It goes in. I mean, it's just like any other, like email. You can just pass it on, except for some of the privacy tangles. So if you can get it out of the place that has it, you can get it to everybody, you know, considering what other constraints there are that are independent of getting it out. Like you can't just send everybody's data to the public, you know, okay. Things like that.
Great. So Leslie's had been waiting. So Leslie, go ahead, and then we need to open it up to public comment.
Okay, so we talk about value, and I think that we talk about getting the data out. I think there's a new value, which is getting the data in, and that might be more in line with the patients as a primary tier. So, but I do think that payers are playing more a role, and if we get to value-based care, and we're talking about the partnership between payers, patients, and providers, along that might be a consistent way to group it. And then you have the tier one that's value-based care beneficiaries, and then tier two, which is everyone else.
So Christina and Terry, this is Lauren. I think we need to just break here for public comment. And if we don't have any, we can always come back and close up on this final discussion point. At this point, operator, can you please open the line for public comment?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. Just to remind everyone to please keep your comments to no longer than 3 minutes. And while we are waiting for folks to dial in, just remind everyone that our next USCDI Task Force call will be a week from today on April 4th at same time, 3:30 Eastern. And operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
There are no comments in the queue at this time.
Okay. With that, I will hand it back to you, Christina, for the last few minutes.
Great. Thank you. So were there, I see, Nancy, you have your hand up. I don't want to lose the conversation of Leslie's proposal to have the tier one as value-based care. So are there any comments on Leslie's last comment? And if not, Nancy, go ahead and chime in.
This is Terry. Just the whole, I'm just kind of anti tier one, tier two. I don't know if that helps us. That's my comment to Leslie's.
Yeah,
comment.
And I kind of agree.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree, and I was wanting to support Leslie's comment that I don't think there should be tiers at all. I think the list in and of itself kind of makes priorities, but convening the groups together for value-based care seems to make a lot of sense to me. And then the third thing is, isn't all of this the ecosystem? So I'm still confused about that particular bullet.
Agree. Agreed.
I think the ecosystem was a reference to say, we know we haven't included everyone. There's a bigger ecosystem, just because if we remember the first homework we had, we had so many, the list just kept going on and on.
So then to me, that makes ecosystem and others kind of duplicative.
Oh, yep. I'm going to take that back. That my statement should be towards others.
And to get back to Steve's comment about, I think it was Steve, of sort of healthcare providers that are on the fringe of healthcare, like schools and the police as the largest mental health provider in the country. You know, how do we include those folks? They're not quite healthcare, but they have an impact on it.
Yeah, I kind of liked community service providers. You know, I mean, on the one hand, you got a school nurse that is a provider, or, you know, a jail physician who's a provider. And on the other hand, you've got other service providers in those same systems that may have a need to exchange data.
So, and I would think we should not include criminal justice or police, because that may have a negative reaction to readers thinking we're giving the data to a group that may be sometimes worried about not being friendly in certain neighborhoods. I mean, I agree with we need them, but I don't know if you want to highlight them.
So, Christina, this is Lauren. I see we have maybe two last comments before we need to wrap up from Nancy and Rich.
Nancy?
Or maybe not. I think she just maybe put her hand down.
I'm talking on
Nancy.
I think I've covered all my comments. I totally support the removing the tiers, value-based care. I do think there's a role in here for somewhere and somehow, if it's through the value-based care arrangement, I think that's fine from a quality perspective and quality reporting. And I think community services, without calling out police or any others, pretty much covers those kind of some kind of wording around community services. Certainly supports all of those additional caregivers that should be in this overall ecosystem.
Thank you, Nancy. I see we're over. So, Rich, go ahead and make your final comment.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, if we were doing really well on the fundamentals, then, you know, I think extending the breadth makes sense. But I guess I would just ask about what the purpose of the slide is, if it isn't for us to provide some guidance on where priorities should be. If not, what are we trying to achieve here? You know, I think that that's a pretty important part of this, is there's a limitless number of things that we don't do, but I think we have to help the community, the large community, make some decisions and make some forward progress on the priority areas that we do want to achieve. So if we just make it a broad list, I don't know how it helps us.
So, Rich, you'd be in favor of, in a sense, keeping the tiers. Say we're going to focus on patients and providers, and hopefully everyone else benefits.
That's what I would do.
Some
I can
way,
agree with
I,
that.
Terry, to your point, that that to me made sense. But I think what's important is that we are helping to provide a process for selecting out, not bringing a long list in.
Okay, so within the context of helping us focus on work that needs to be done, not doing all work, we'll start here.
Right.
Okay.
As long as community stays in, right?
So moved.
Okay, Christina, I would say for any other thoughts relative to this last slide or just in general, feel free to send your written thoughts or edits to Christina and Terry and Adam and myself. If there are no other final comments from Christina or Terry, do you have anything else to add before we close?
Look
great
for
job,
homework.
Gang. Yeah,
thanks.
You do your homework. Right.
Yes, and homework as well.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for your time today, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.